Hey, everyone, and welcome to the New Visionary Podcast, a podcast for artists who are ready to reach greater heights in their art careers. I'm your host, Victoria J. Fry, founder of Visionary Art Collective and New Visionary Magazine. Join me for inspiring conversations with some of the most inspirational visionaries in today's art world. Let's jump in. Hey, artists, and welcome back to the New Visionary Podcast. Today, we have the absolute honor of chatting with Kim Dorland, a Canadian painter based in Toronto. I'm sure many of you already know who Kim Dorland is and are familiar with his work. But for those of you who aren't familiar yet, Kim is best known for his depictions of densely forested landscapes, trailer parks, raucous parties, and zombies. Kim, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me.
Nice intro.
Yeah. It feels so surreal to have you here. And I think I mentioned that like before we even started recording. I have gone to so many of your exhibitions over the years, and I'm just so in love with your work and all that you're doing. And I'm really excited to dive in today and learn a little bit more about your journey. Yeah, I'd love to start just by asking you a little bit about your journey as an artist. And can you tell us, like, how did it start for you? Have you always been painting? What did that journey look like, and how has it evolved over the years?
I mean, I've told this story a few times, so if I sound glib, you know, bear with me. I was sort of a nowhere teenager. I had no parental support. I had quit high school more than once, and I think I was actually on the way to quitting again. And I just kind of made this like snap decision. I was working at a hotel, and there was this person that worked there who had just finished art school in Calgary. And I don't know why, but I found myself always peppering him with questions about art school and what art school was and everything. And then I kind of just decided I was going to do it. And it wasn't, I didn't really have any reason to believe I'd be any good. I didn't draw or anything. It just happened. And so my great-grandmother happened to be a very, very amateur Sunday painter. And she gave me a box of her old paints, and I started from there. And it was interesting because, you know, when you sort of have no opportunities growing up due to poverty and lack of support and stuff, you can kind of say, well, you know what? I'm going to be an artist. And it's not so outlandish because you weren't really going to do anything anyway. So if I failed at this, it was, you know, at least I tried something. And that's kind of how it started. And then, you know, I'm a pretty tenacious human being. And so from that point on, it's been only painting, you know, only making art for 32 years now or something like that.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, I've heard your story before, but it's really cool to actually talk with you and hear it from you now. And can you tell us a little bit about the subject matter of your paintings, especially in your earlier work, and how your personal experiences impacted the content of your paintings?
Yeah, well, I kind of went with that author idea of write what you know, basically write your own story. And I just kind of put it into painting, and I just decided to paint my own story. And, you know, this was after my master's degree, after probably 12 to 15 years of working diligently and trying, you know what you do when you're young, you try out things and imitate your influences and so on. So by about 2003 or four, it kind of all glued together in this one painting that I call The Loner, which is basically a self-portrait. But that's kind of where it kicked into me, like, you know, tell your own story. And I started, you know, back then with my teenager story, the years of being a teenager growing up in Alberta, in poverty, and some of the things I witnessed, and that space too, like that actual landscape. And then that has kind of been the guiding principle through my work all the way till now, is like telling my own story. It just sometimes that story is more demented than others. But, you know, that's kind of where that idea came from. And it suits me, I think, you know, to just sort of use my own life as source material. It just kind of it suits my sort of hermit-like personality, I guess.
Yes. And I think what's so intriguing, one of the many things that I find so intriguing about your work is it's your personal story and it's rooted in your experiences. And, you know, as you're describing like your life as a teenager and growing up in poverty and what that looked like for you. But I also feel that it's a story that so many people can relate to. And I remember when I walked into, I don't remember which gallery, one of the Chelsea galleries, and I saw your work for the first time. It was my first time, like I walked in, I'll never forget, and I see these huge paintings and there's like bridges, like overpass, I don't know what you would call them, like covered in graffiti. And I was like, this is so interesting to see this in this, you know, like this subject matter in this really high-end Chelsea Gallery. I hadn't seen anything like it. I think that's a moment where I just immediately like fell in love with your work and was so inspired. And
oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah. And it started to make me realize like you can show, I think I maybe before that I had this idea or like this preconceived notion that, you know, these really high-end galleries would only show a certain kind of work, but you were like stripping it back and showing your experience, like the graffiti and there's litter and there's like teenagers in the woods. I don't know how to even describe it, but have you found over the years that a lot of people have connected to your story and what kind of...
Yeah. I mean, I think if I'm allowed to say that I have a strength as an artist, I do think it's that I'm able to communicate visually with my viewer and more than just, you know, razzle dazzle. There's some kind of emotional connection that fortunately, or I don't know, somehow that works. And I definitely have had so many people talk to me about, you know, how the spaces I painted reminded them of their spaces that they grew up in. And that's always been great. I mean, to be honest with you, there are days where I'm still surprised that people like my work because of the stuff that I'm attracted to, you know, because I guess my paintings are pretty or beautiful because of the way I use paint, but thematically, they're generally not. It's actually pretty depressing. But even from that, I know which gallery you're speaking of, and I know exactly which painting you're speaking of. But even that, it kind of always surprised me that people were so generous with their opinions of my work, if that makes any sense. Like, I'm trying really hard. I'm like putting out the best thing that I can put out, I think. But there are, yeah, sometimes it surprises me even that I get away with what I get away with, subject-wise, you know, or even painting-wise.
Well, they're so real and they're so raw. And I think it's like, you're even when I was looking at your work, I mean, I come from a different, sort of a different background, but I grew up in the suburbs. So I was seeing like these suburban streets. And when I was seeing, you know, like friends, like teenagers in the woods, and like, it reminded me of my own high school experience. It reminded me of just little glimpses of my own life. And I was like seeing it kind of reflected in a way in front of me in this like super high-end blue chip gallery. And it was like a really cool moment. And I think there's something really beautiful about highlighting, I don't want to say like the everyday, but just these experiences that you had that were so meaningful to you, but also that so many people I think can connect with.
Yeah. I mean, as many people want to connect, I'm grateful for it, you know? Yeah, this is just my perspective and my little life kind of put out there. And I'm grateful if one person connects to it. But the fact that several people do is even better.
And then I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned the way that you use paint, and that was also something that I was so drawn to. And I'm sure a lot of people have probably told you that over the years, but like this thick impasto. You know, I was reading about your work and I think I read something like at times when the paint is so thick and so heavy, you have to use screws. Mm-hmm. And so can you tell us?
Yeah, I definitely went through that phase.
Yeah. Like what led you, was it, how did that come to be this, the way that you use paint?
Well, it came from, it's kind of boring and almost too simplistic, but you know, when I was in grad school, the only conversation in grad school was about photography and painting. You know, this is back in the early, well, when did I go to school? Late 90s. Oh God, I don't even remember. I graduated that 98. Oh yeah. So yeah, early 2000s. It was very much about photography and the relationship of painting to photography. And I just, you know, in my student brain said, I'm going to put the paint on a little thicker so that you can see it. And, you know, for me, that was like a big, a big like moment, but it wasn't a big moment in that that's kind of where it started. And then I just kind of liked it. Like I just kind of liked the gross physicality of paint. And then I'm, you know, in every way that I work, whether it's thick paint or, you know, whatever, I always try to take it like to the extreme of what it is. So those thicknesses just kept getting crazier and crazier. And that's just kind of how it evolved.
It's amazing.
I mean, the stuff is amazing. It can make you feel like something is something. Like it can make you feel like a face is a face, you know, or a tree is a tree. So I just try to really dig into that.
Yes. Yes. And also I think just thinking about some of your paintings that I've seen in person, there's like areas where the paint is really thick and built up. And then there's areas where it's not so mm-hmm. much. So you have this beautiful, like dimension, I don't know, just there's like these different dimensions happening, I think, at the same time. And,
Yeah. Well, nobody talks about that part though, right? Like it's true. Like if the paintings were just thick, if they were all at the same pace, it would have no meaning. It wouldn't even look interesting. It would just be like that. And you see that like on highlight reels on Instagram, you see it all the time. There's this one painter whom I don't know. And they're just using a trowel to paint flowers and stuff. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of fun, I suppose, but it's not what these are about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I don't think the thicknesses would be interesting if there weren't like, you know, drains of very, very thin paint, thin acrylic, you know, sprays of things. Yeah. It's kind of making everything work in concert.
It's that beautiful contrast. And I mean, you do it so well. Mm. And truly, like I could just stand in front of one of your paintings for like hours. And I feel like I would keep finding these different little moments, which also I wanted to ask you about the scale of your work.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to ask you about the scale of your work, because most of the work that I've seen of yours, like in a physical setting, they've been really big paintings. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, at the time, I'd still work on some, like I have, you can't see it, but I'm working on a 7x5 right now of painting of my wife here and stuff. So I still work occasionally large like that, but I'm mostly now in the kind of mid scale, sort of arm scale, 5x4 feet and smaller. I don't know. Like I kind of enjoy, like, I mean, I love working large scale, but sometimes you end up keeping those around. And I'm sick of paying storage on them. So I kind of try to keep, my studio is not so big. So I try to keep things to a more modest scale now, but every scale has its challenges. And, you know, now that I'm saying this, I just realized, my last show here in Toronto, I actually showed an 8x16 or 21 foot painting. So I still pull them out every now and then, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's kind of amazing. Like when you go see some large works, it's just amazing being taken over by something that's bigger than you and working at that scale.
Totally. It's like an immersive experience.
Yeah. It's like a space that engulfs you.
Absolutely. But I think there's something to be said for the smaller work as well. Do you have a preference, or like, how is it for you working smaller versus larger?
I don't really have a preference. I mean, smaller works are fun because what I like about them is I always have a handful of them around and on the go. And the nice thing about that is that the stakes are really low. So if you have 10 16 by 20s that you're working on, you can challenge yourself to try things that are different or even stupid. And sometimes that stupid thing bears fruit, or sometimes it's the act of working through a mistake that gets you to a better spot. So small works function like that for me. So I really like that. But to be honest with you, I think like I just have, you know, I have 3 large paintings and about 5 or 6 small paintings around right now. I kind of like working through all of them. There's nothing that I really like more than the other.
Yeah. I think every, like, no matter what scale you're working at, there's like advantages and there's challenges, like you said. I have to ask you about your color palette, of course, because it's such a big part of your work. And I think that's the other thing, right? Like when I think back to that moment where I saw your work for the first time, and there was like these huge canvases and the fluorescent colors. It was also something I hadn't seen a lot of. And could you just tell us about your journey?
You see it more now.
Yeah, even more now. How has your journey with color evolved mm-hmm. since you started painting?
Well, the fluorescent color really just came because I hated working from a white background. I can deal with it now. But then it was too absolute or something like that. So I kind of thought, why don't we just use like shopping mall color? You know what I mean? Like, let's pick the ugliest fluorescent color and start from there. And then, you know, it was partially like that, like thought through, and then partially just, you know, as the studio experimentation goes on, I just really liked the way it looked. I still do. I mean, I still, I can show you just while we're speaking here. Like I still pull out the fluorescent. The overall color theory is really, it's sort of, I don't want to sound like a jerk when I say this, but it's really like natural. Like it's just, I just make sure I have a lot of very good colors on hand. And as I kind of work, it's very intuitive.
Yeah. And I think that's the best way.
For lack of a better word, you know.
No, I think that makes total sense. And it's a beautiful thing when you can approach your work intuitively. And I'm sure over time you have found like color combinations that really resonate with you. And mm-hmm. I feel like I see like the hot pink and the green so much in your work.
Yeah. I mean, those are just great colors.
Yeah. They work so well together. But you just have developed like such a beautiful signature style. Anytime I'm on social media and your painting pops up, I don't even have to look at, like I know within a second that it's yours.
Oh, that's so amazing to hear. Thank you.
Yeah. And it's really cool too, because I feel like you've branched out and your subject matter has sort of changed a little bit, or you know, shifted in some ways, but your the way that you approach your work and your technique and your style, it's like whether you're painting a forest or I feel like it was, I don't want to misspeak, but maybe a few years ago I was seeing some portraits.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I've done several portraits.
Yeah, portraits from you. And then also like and we posted this to the Visionary Art Collective Instagram recently, like this beautiful still life of flowers. But like no matter what it is, the way that you apply the paint, the color palette, like I just know immediately it's your work. Did it come really naturally to you to develop this style? Did you have any, because with some artists that I talk to, and I think this is just sort of an ongoing conversation, when you're building an art career, it's like, okay, we know that we, on some level, like it's important to be cohesive and like develop our own style and our own voice, but we also don't want to feel like we're pigeonholing ourselves or boxing ourselves in. Like, how has that been for you?
You know, if you saw my work through my master's degree and even the first couple of years after that, you certainly wouldn't have recognized the work. I mean, it did come. I mean, the way I always describe it is every time I tried on a new hat, I fell in love with it. And I only did that. So for example, I remember a good year where I was going to be the biggest photorealist painter. And I did like 12 to 15 huge paintings, just photorealist, you know what I mean? And I don't even know if they were particularly good, but I would teach myself that skill set or get through that skill set. And then I would decide, I don't want to do this at all. And I'd destroy them all and start again. So there, you know, to get to this point, there were several years of that. And then the other thing is like influences. I mean, I think a lot of people have told me that my work is very recognizable, but I think a lot of people would recognize my influences too, or at least certain lineages of people who I've looked at and so on. And the roundabout way of saying is like, I've never really been afraid of influence. Like if somebody does something that I see interesting, even to this day, I don't want to rip someone off, but I certainly want to figure out why they use something that I find interesting and to bend it kind of into the way that I do my own thing. So I always find that there's something, whether it's subject-wise or technique-wise, that's keeping me interested enough to keep at it. And then the style thing, it sort of just happens. I mean, I don't want to be that kind of too out there, but it is just something that has evolved over thousands and thousands of hours of working, I guess.
Yeah.
No. I guess in a roundabout way, I'm trying to say like, it wasn't something that I sat down and calculated.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that happened and evolved over, you know, probably a couple of decades.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you sharing that. And it's something, you know, I work with a lot of emerging artists and I would also consider myself an emerging artist. And I think that has been an essential question that has come up a lot is like, you know, this, how do I find this balance of not like finding a style? Because I think it's just, it is something, as you're describing, that happens organically and intuitively and over time. But then also, you know, working with artists that are like, I want to try something totally different. And actually, I've come across this with artists I know who are more mid-career as well, who are represented by galleries. And they're like, I want to try something totally different, but I'm a little bit nervous because I already have this sort of like recognizable body of work and this gallery representing me. And I'm like nervous or fearful to branch out a little bit. I don't know if you've ever felt that way, but.
No, yeah. Honestly, I think that if a person is doing, you know, it's like Andre 3000, right? Everybody loves Andre 3000 in Outkast.
Yes.
And then he drops this, I personally think, miraculously beautiful ambient album, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Andre 3000, you know, it's going to be quality. Mm-hmm. So if he takes a complete about face, I mean, I've been fortunate in never underestimating my audience. Mm-hmm. And I have felt like, I know that like there's that I've been told to my face, people love telling me what they don't like to my face at my own openings. But, you know, I've been told what doesn't work or does work. But for the most part, my audience has been able to follow me along my weirdest trajectories. I always think a change of course is worth it, even if you go through that change of course to arrive at exactly where you started. You know, it's either you needed a change or you didn't need a change. And sometimes working through those problems will help you figure that out.
I love that. I think that's such a good way of putting it too. And I always say to artists, like, it can feel sometimes, I guess, a little bit nerve-wracking if you want to try something completely different, especially if you've established an audience and a presence. But at the same mm-hmm. time, you have to do it. You just have to do it because you're an artist and you can't hold back.
2 years ago, I did a graphic novel. You know what I mean? Like I hand drew a graphic novel and showed all the artwork at a show and everything. I mean, you just got to do the stuff you feel like doing.
Wait, that's so cool. And I'm like, how did I not know about this? That's amazing. How did that come to be?
Yeah, well, I love graphic novels, and I was just reading and reading and reading them. And I'd had a story in my head for quite a while it was a narrative, but it didn't have any text. So it's a speechless graphic novel, if that makes any sense, just pictures. About a painter who goes into the woods and gets frustrated and then goes crazy and basically gets overgrown by kind of a vegetation monster of depression. And then his wife goes in to look for him and so on and so forth. It's pretty weird. I'm very proud of it. I still think, but anyway, the point I'm really trying to make is like, I had no reason or right to spend a year of my life doing a graphic novel, but I did it. And I think it improved my paintings. I think the novel itself turned out well. So I don't know. The one thing I try to live by in this whole thing is like, it's just art. Like there's no consequences if I fail in the studio. If I try something new and it fails, what are the consequences? Just don't show anyone.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that advice. This is also something that Elizabeth Gilbert talks about a lot when it comes to your creative practice. She always says the stakes are so much lower than you make them out to be. Like if you try something,
it means, absolutely.
Yeah. Like what's the worst thing that's going to happen? And oftentimes it's okay. Yeah. Or you just start over or whatever it is. But I actually feel like
throw it in the garbage.
Yeah. And I don't know if you experience this as well, but I've actually found in my own art practice that I learn sometimes so much more from the quote unquote failed paintings than from the ones that work out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the challenge, I always say the best paintings come from at least there's got to be some moment of crisis. There's got to be some point where you're like, this sucks. I'm never going to pull it off. And then you work through that and something, you know, vital appears. You know, I could go in autopilot and I can cook up a pretty convincing painting, but it won't have anything. So I think those failures are, as glib as it sounds, really where a lot of learning happens.
Yeah. And essential to the process.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, who knows what the hell we're doing? We're all trying to talk around this crazy thing we do, right? But, you know, I'm sitting in a room here with a bunch of cloth and canvas and trying to explain it.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I try to keep it like that, like light.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate
you can get
that.
Pretty bogged down.
Totally. I also wanted to ask you how it was for you, like when you first started showing your paintings and did you like get gallery representation right away? Was it a struggle? And I wanted to ask you this as well. Because so many of the artists who tune into this podcast are emerging artists, early career artists, they're working to get their art out into the world and kind of going through that process. How was that for you?
Well, it very different than it would be now. Cause like I went into galleries with my slide package. So young people won't know this, but there was this awful thing called slides. And the worst part of it was getting all the gear together to take images of your work and then sending the slides away for 2 weeks and getting them back and they'd all be yellow. Like they never worked, not once. So you'd have to go into a gallery and, well, this is how I did it. I walked in with my slides and a self-addressed stamped envelope to return it. But I mean, I did a little more research than that. I should backtrack a bit. I mean, when I decided to do this, I did always know that I wanted to live off my work because frankly, I'm unemployable and I'd rather not work for someone else. Thank goodness I found this. So, you know, my intention always was to be a gallery artist who lived off their work. So I think that's important to declare, you know what I mean? Because if that's not your intention, then you will have a different avenue ahead of you or roads ahead of you or whatever. So, you know, I kind of pinpointed a couple of people who I thought would be willing to give an emerging artist a shot. One of them was an art sort of young space here in Toronto that probably everybody of my generation showed with once or twice called the Bus Gallery, Catherine Mulhern's old gallery. Oh, she had a space in New York for a while too, actually. While I had a show up at Catherine's gallery, I had Jamie come down from down the street and he offered me representation from there. I remember my first painting sold for $250 and I was thrilled to get it. I was like, oh, I can go buy some paint. I mean, my story is that I was lucky in that my ambition kind of matched the gallery's ambition at the time. So Jamie at the time was one of the first Canadian galleries to take art to art fairs in Miami. And this is, you know, before they were quite as crazy as they are now. And then, you know, I made a couple of connections through that. So it was partially deciding that I wanted to do it. Then it was singling out the right people. And then it was luck. Like there was some luck involved too in that. You know, the gallery I was with kind of caught on to art fairs at the right time. I was at the right point in my career and all of that. And then, but I think like the one nice thing that I think emerging artists now have that I didn't have is the social media. I mean, the ability to have millions of people look at your work instantly is an amazing thing. And I think too, like, with all of the structures that we're looking at right now and all of the sort of hierarchies that we're looking at and questioning right now, I think this is a great opportunity for emerging artists to think of something totally new, like totally groundbreaking. It's, I don't know what it would be. I'm just trying to get into the studio every day, but I don't know. I don't know what that looks like and I don't have a prescription for it, but it feels to me like there might be something really interesting and exciting for emerging artists to put together.
Absolutely. I mean, I talk a lot about social media and I do think that it is like one of the most, if not the most powerful tool that artists have available to them in terms
100%
of
agreed.
Yeah, sharing their work and just getting more eyes on their work. And, you know, there's artists that I know that sell their work and have built a collector base for themselves just through social media. And I think there's something mm-hmm. also really special about working with a gallery, especially if it's the right gallery that supports you and your vision. I think that's like such a beautiful relationship, but it is pretty amazing to like to live in this digital age that we can just, you know, post a painting or an image of our work and thousands of people can see it within seconds.
Mm-hmm. That's also terrifying because if you post this, a failure, that's out there pretty hard too. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, and then, I mean, I definitely went through years, at least 4 or 5 years of just crushing rejection too. I mean, going into galleries and them just pointing at the door because you weren't ready. And I wasn't ready, but I, you know, I did have to kind of steel myself for that too.
Well, and I appreciate you your transparency with that, because when we have, you know, a really established artist like yourself on the podcast, I think it's really, I don't want to say refreshing, but kind of when we also learn that like you've had, you know, you've faced rejection as well. And that's been part of your journey.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cause when I see you and I see your work, it's, you know, I wouldn't necessarily think about that, although I'm sure every artist, you know, in some capacity experiences rejection. But yeah, can you tell us a little bit about what helped you to stay resilient and focused in spite of that rejection?
Hmm. Well, I mean, I still go through it. I still go through self-doubt. And I mean, it's really nice to hear the things you're saying about me, because I have no idea of it really, because I'm not super social. I kind of just hang out with my wife and my kids and that's it. But I always knew rejection was going to be part of this thing. I'm making paintings, you know what I mean? Like, I'm making art that is inherently judged. And so, I don't know, I certainly remember some tearful, frustrated, shaking my fist at a cloud kind of upset, you know, at how difficult all of this was to kind of get going. I remember that. I actually remember almost quitting at one point, now that I think about it. I was in pretty bad debt and nothing was selling and so on and so forth. But I think just the love of working, the love of doing this work, I love painting. Like, I just love it. Regardless of the, you know, how frustrating the business side and all of that can be. I just love doing this. So I think that got me through. And then, like, without a doubt, I've had an amazing support system, you know, with Lori, my wife. She's been with me since we were 17. So she's seen every brushstroke, you know what I mean? So, you know, we certainly got through a lot of the more difficult times together. You need a support system. You can't do this alone.
Absolutely. I appreciate you sharing that. And also, I totally agree. I think, like, having a community around you or supportive network is essential. Like, I would argue that it's not really possible to succeed unless you have a network or even just a small community of people who are cheering you on. I mean, I suppose it is possible, but I think it's so much harder and more difficult to, you know, to reach your goals if you don't have that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, me personally, I'm definitely more to the, like, my support system is one other person. Mm-hmm. And I suppose, you know, the people at the gallery and all of that, like, of course, they're supportive. Mm-hmm. But I do think, especially for younger people, I notice that people who have more friends around them, more people in the struggle together, definitely, I think more opportunities can happen that way. And also just that, while this is really difficult and while you're developing your much needed thick skin, those support systems can be really crucial, for sure.
Absolutely. And it is, I mean, you do develop a thicker skin over time. I always say, like, I think artists are some of the most resilient, if not the most resilient people that I've ever met, because they just continue to persevere in spite of external rejection, but also you mentioned self-doubt. And I think that's something that comes up so much. Yeah.
The self-doubt would be, like, my biggest cross to bear. Like, my biggest issue is easily self-doubt. Like, if I'm, you know, if somebody wants to look up to me for any reason and see me as an emerging artist, they should know that all of that anxiety comes along with you, I think. So that sounds really dark and negative, but.
No, I was going to say, like, it's a topic that's come up a lot on the podcast. We've talked a lot about mental health struggles. We've talked so much, especially this season, mm-hmm. about navigating through self-doubt. I've opened up about my own experience with anxiety and how that's, like, you know, just managing that on a daily, like, literally a daily basis. What has been helpful for you as you've continued to persevere in your art career as you've faced self-doubt?
Well, the challenge of work, forcing myself to figure something out, sometimes taking a radical shift. Like, I got really into woodcuts for a while and perfecting that technique. I should be very careful, but getting much better at my carving and stuff like that. Like, I do find that if I'm really struggling with self-doubt, like, really focusing in on some element of my practice helps me a lot. I take crazy long walks with my dog, and Lori is just, like, the best support in this. But it is, like, it is a component, even at my stage of the game. Self-doubt, anxiety, you know, feelings of, what do they call it? Imposter syndrome, you know, sort of, like, feeling like that. I think it depends on you and your personal kind of makeup and mental health, but that stuff doesn't go away.
It's like learning to, it's like knowing that it's always going to be part of you and your experience. Mm-hmm. So it's like not trying to get rid of it, but learning how to work with it and just accepting that it's going to be there. Yeah, it's your studio mate. I love that.
it is. Like, I think you can fight it as long as you want, but if it's your studio mate, then you know where it is and you can deal with it appropriately.
Yeah. And knowing what strategies work for you. I always share, like, when I start to feel anxious and I feel that coming on, I immediately go to my strategies. And sometimes it is as simple as just going for a walk to clear your head, and sometimes it's drawing on multiple strategies, but, like, just knowing what's going to help you to work with it and to kind of be able to move forward in your work and life. So
I think too, having the kind of support in this where it isn't just like, you're the best. They just don't understand. But like someone who actually challenges you, like, to be honest, Lori and I have been having a big fight over a painting since last night and up until I was contacting you. And it's, you know, in the moment, it's like we're fighting about a painting and stuff like that. And now I can be away from it and kind of laugh at it. But isn't it amazing that I have someone in my life that I can fight about a painting with, like fight about a painting? So I think that that is also crucial. Somebody who knows what your intentions are and doesn't just give you positive feedback, but lets you know when, like Lori has told me pretty clearly when a painting is absolutely not working. Like she told me yesterday, she's like, do not show this one, you'll regret it. but that's awesome, right? Like you need that. Not everything's going to be perfect.
Well, and also you two have been together for so long that she knows you so well. Yeah. She's seen your work develop from like those very, very early stages. So yeah, that's such a beautiful and like rare and special thing that you have.
Yeah, I'm pretty blessed. I'm pretty lucky. Yeah, no doubt.
And I think that having, whether it's like one person, your partner, or your spouse, or just a couple people, but I think to get that sort of ongoing critique, I suppose, just getting feedback on your work is really helpful and also kind of gets you out of your head a little bit. That I always share, like when I graduated from art school, that was the thing I missed the most, was just being in an environment where I was making work and someone would just walk by and share a comment, or your professor would just, it was kind of integrated into just the everyday life of making your, or process of making your work. And I think it's hard when we're in our, like I've had a lot of conversations with artists about this as well, when you're making your work on your own in your studio and you don't have that at all, it's very easy, I think, to start questioning what you're doing, or like just to have a space to talk about it, even if it is just one person that's sharing some feedback with you.
Yeah. And unfortunately it's the grit to keep, to kind of go when all of those supports aren't in place either, you know? Yeah. Sometimes you're just going to feel shitty while you're making work. And I think that that's a part of it too. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. It's the highs and lows of your studio practice.
Yeah.
it's not always, you know, it's interesting because I feel like people who like non-artists sometimes think of, you know, painting or just making art is this really relaxing, like cathartic thing. And it can be, but I have gotten the most emotional, the most frustrated, the most like just those really big emotions during the creative process. Not always, but that's when it happens sometimes.
Yeah. It's a strange thing we do. It really is. And especially when you start to dissect it, it's like, huh, what? This makes no sense.
When you take a step back and you really look at it from a different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I try to, like, whenever I get too crunchy about it all, I try to just give my head a shake and just say, like, how blessed are you right now that you get to sit and work on this full time? And, you know, I have my complaints, but I shouldn't.
Yeah, but and those are valid too. I mean, no matter what you're doing and how amazing it is, there's always going to be, you know, different parts to it and things that come up. And I wanted to ask you before we start to wrap up this inspiring conversation. And like, I also just want to thank you again for your transparency and
pleasure.
Just sharing. Yeah. It's so wonderful to hear a little bit more about your journey. And what advice would you give to an artist who is probably listening and is at the beginning of their art career and they are really working to get their work out there into the world and like all the struggles and beautiful things that come with that, what advice might you give?
Okay. I do have a standard piece of advice that I always give, and it was the advice that worked for myself. So hopefully this will help someone out there. So when I was struggling to kind of break out and have people notice my work, there's always the sort of people in that lifestyle that look like they can do something for you, right? Like there's, you know, there's movers and shakers that are better than you at moving and shaking. There always will be, especially than me, because I'm not good at that part. And so this person was making me some promises, you know, some things were going to happen, some introductions were going to be made. And I happened to work at a bar at the time. And I noticed this person kind of showed up every night at about 7 o'clock and talk to me more and more about all these things that were going to happen. And then it just clued into me. I was like, this is bullshit. He's like a cat coming for milk, dude. He's using you for drinks. And so it just sort of all came to me. And I was like, I can waste my time waiting to meet the right person to do something for me, or I can double down on my practice. And so my thinking is that if I do the work with the work, then the work will do the work for me. So my approach has never really been to be out there shaking the most hands. It's not my personality. So basically what I've tried to do is just make my work as vital, exciting, beautiful, painful, whatever, so that when somebody's looking at the work, it's undeniable. Does that make sense? Like, not if my work is so great that it's undeniable, more just like what I wanted to do is right there and it's done to the best of my ability. And in my opinion, that is the first and most crucial building block of an art career. If you don't have the work, even if you're a really good hustler, you'll be seen through eventually. You know, I've seen it over the course of my career, people who have really, really high highs, and then you just don't even think about them anymore because the work wasn't there in the first place. So, you know what I mean? That's what I would say. That's my advice to young people or emerging artists or whomever is invest everything you have into your work, then figure the other stuff out.
I love
that. Right? That's good advice.
That's really good advice. It's really powerful advice. And as you were sharing, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's inspiring me to just, one of my goals this year is to double down more on my own studio practice. And I think it's just such an important reminder that yes, all these other things we're doing to grow our art careers, they're important, but the foundation is your studio practice. It's getting in the studio, yeah. It's making the work, executing your vision. Like, that has to come first. And once that's strong and stable, like, because that is your foundation, things will just start to happen, but not to lose sight of that.
Yeah. Like, certainly, you know, I should add to that, like, there are ways that I think that my career has probably suffered because of my lack of social curiosity. I'm very comfortable in my own company, in my studio. So, like, there, you know, I would say that probably that's been something I could have done better. But on the other hand, for my comfort level with kind of going to openings and all of that stuff, I'm satisfied with what I've carved out, if that makes sense, at least in a working way.
Yeah, it makes total sense. It's just a reminder to continue to prioritize the studio practice and prioritize the work and make the work. I mean, you do this so well, like, make work that is truly aligned to you and that is authentic and that is in your voice and, you know, connected to perhaps your personal experiences, but you really feel that connection to what you're creating.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. I mean, that's the goal. I have a regret in my earlier years as an artist. Be nice to people. Be very, very nice to people. I bought into the whole idea of, like, you're busy and things are happening and you just got to be a cantankerous jerk to make things happen. And that's a huge regret of mine. I wish I was not such a prima donna.
Well, you live and you learn. And also sometimes the most simple advice is the most powerful. And, like, yes, no matter what you're doing, whether you're building an art career or something else, like, yeah, it all comes down to the relationships and how you're treating people and, you know, your tone and how you're communicating. And I try to remind myself of this as well. No matter how busy you are, like you said, or how much you have on your plate, you've got to treat everyone, obviously, like, just with respect and in a way that's kind and the way that you feel good about at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. That is, that's going to get you so much farther. I have such good relationships with people, like, the people who pick up my work and stuff like that. I try to treat those people with just the most respect. You know what I mean? Cause they deserve it. But also, like, I have, you know, if I was in a pinch, I could call that person and they would, you know what I mean? Like, it's those little things that, just make all the difference in this, because, like, the art community is really small.
100%. I totally believe in that. And it's like nurturing those relationships as well. And not necessarily thinking about, like, what people can do for you, but more thinking about, like, what you can do for them.
Exactly. Yeah. Treating them fairly, paying them, paying them right away. That's a big one in my business. Yeah. That kind of stuff. It goes a long way. It's important.
It does. It's oftentimes those really small interactions too, that do go a long way. And, like, just practicing that on a daily basis.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think it's really important.
Well, Kim, thank you so much. This was amazing and an honor. And I shared with you before we even started recording that, you know, I just love your work so much. I've been following you for like 15 years. To have you on the podcast is definitely a pinch me moment that I'm having. So thank you so much again for joining us.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And for everyone tuning in, we will see you next time. Thank you for tuning in and supporting our platform. To learn more about New Visionary Magazine, head over to visionaryartcollective.com/magazine. You can order individual copies on Amazon or subscribe annually to digital issues. We also have opportunities to get featured in the magazine, so be sure to join our newsletter and follow us on Instagram. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to leave a review on iTunes or tag us on Instagram. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.